Hi, family. My name is Don, and I'm an addict.
Hey,
and I want to thank the Montgomery County area for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope on courage. I'm from the D.C. area. My clean date is May 12, 1990. And when I got the phone call and was asked to lead this meeting on courage, my spirit jumped. Because that's something that I've learned since being in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. But before I could talk about courage, I have to talk about fear. When I got here, I had a lot of self-centered fear. I was a very fearful individual, you know, and that started at a very young age. You know, my first memory is one of fear. It was when my mother came to pick me up from North Carolina, and I was a little girl. It was dark, and the train blew its whistle, and I became afraid, and I ran. And after coming to D.C., and the fear ties into my using, and I'll get to that. After coming to Washington, D.C. area, you know, and living here and growing up in an area over in Northeast, you know, I was small, I was light-skinned. You know, my brother was small, and he was light-skinned. And we grew up in the area, you know, where I had to learn how to fight. You know, I got called out of my name a lot, you know. And the bottom line is that I was always fearful that someone, I grew up with people that looked at me and said, oh, she thinks she cute. Right off the bat. It had nothing to do with how I acted or what I said. It was just a look. You know, and so I grew up fighting a lot, you know. And to tell you how deep fear runs and how it mobilizes me, I'll give you a scenario, a true scenario. When I was about 12 or 13 years old, we was going to a party, you know, early evening party, me and a few friends. And we was walking down the street, and this dog was on the porch and came charging down the steps, barking and growling and everything, and my girlfriends dispersed. And I was so afraid, I couldn't move. I was paralyzed. And then I got angry. Matter of fact, I got enraged. And I stood there and I called that dog an MF, and I threatened his life. And then I dared him to bite me. And that dog looked at me and turned around and went right on back up that porch. So that's just how fear, it immobilized me, you know. And that's how I grew up, always fearful, you know. Just afraid of what you people thought of me, you know, wanting to be accepted. Just always fearful, you know. And it was this scenario, and this is true, it was this little boy that I liked. I think I fell in love with him when I was 5. And I just thought he was the cutest little thing I had ever seen. And I was afraid to talk to him. You know, I would just say hi, you know, lower my head, move my foot or something. You know, a runaway. And I was 13 years old, and somebody gave me an old English 800, 12 ounce, and I drank that beer. And that beer gave me the courage to stand there and talk. I wasn't lowering my head, I wasn't smiling from ear to ear. I had a whole conversation with him. You know, and what that did, that substance did, it gave me courage. You know, and eventually, you know, I continued to go through life. I continued to finish school, graduate, have a kid, start working. And the whole time, I was using. I would, you know, I was trying to find that niche. Now that when I reflect back, I was trying to find that niche that I fit in. You know, I experimented with weed. I didn't like that. It made me paranoid, made me think too much, and made me smile. I couldn't control smiling. You know, my jaws would hurt at the end. It's like, oh, I don't like this. You know, and I continued to experiment until I had some hair on. Heroin made me not care what you thought of me. It gave me a false sense of courage. You know, and that's kind of like how it began. But what I didn't see was that thin line, that invisible line that you cross over. And eventually I crossed over that line, and use it became a way of life. You know, I'm the type of addict, and I always say I'm a textbook addict. I tried new towns, new jobs, and new lovers. You know, I left here in 87 after being released from the Marlboro Detention Center. You know, and I went back and forth in there so much that that all the officers knew me. You know, and this particular time, I was there, and they had gave me state time. I was on my way to Jessup, you know. But my father and my mother and them, they wrote letters, and they asked that I be released. And my dad lived in lived in California. And so, you know, an attorney, and this is how I see God working in my life even when I didn't know he was there. You know, an attorney took up my case at Georgetown Law School and put in for an appeal. And they came and got me and took me to court, and the judge appealed the time. He took away the time. He said, I think you've been locked up long enough, you know, where I'm not going to stipulate a drug program. I'm going to release you on your own recognizance. You can go wherever. Because they was telling them I was going to California and I was going in a drug treatment program. Well, I need to tell you that when they released me, 3 weeks after they released me and I got on the plane to go to California, I went to California with a habit. And I got off that plane, and I thank God for California. I thank God for that thought of having a geographical cure, because it was in the state of California that I ended up doing things that I never thought I would do. Because I had family and friends back here, you know, always could go somewhere and get a handout. You know, but in California, California's a big state, you know. And it was bottoms that I hit out in California that I don't know if I would have hit back here so soon, you know. And eventually I came back here, and I came back here pregnant with my daughter, and I used the whole time I was pregnant, you know, and moved into a shelter and had my daughter while I was living in the shelter. My daughter came full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks. My daughter was born at 29 weeks. That was my first inkling with my higher power, because I remember laying there on that bed, and they were telling me they were going to have to take my daughter, and she was in duress. The cord had wrapped around her neck, and she was breached. And I remember laying there, and her heart rate went down, was something like 90-something, and a normal heartbeat for a fetus is 140. And they said they were losing her. And I remember laying on that bed and looking my eyes up and saying, God, all I ask is that you not let her suffer for something I did, that I should be the one to suffer. And if you're going to take her, I just ask that you take her right away. Don't let her suffer. And 6 hours after my daughter, and then I threw my hand up and I said, it's on you. And I threw my hand up, and 6 hours after my daughter was born, they took her off all life support. Said she was breathing on her own, and they didn't understand. They kept coming back asking me, what kind of drugs was I using? And And you would think that would be enough to stop me from using. And it did, for a minute. The whole time she was in that hospital, they said all she needed to do is stay here and gain some weight. Because she weighed less than 2 pounds. She was tiny. And every day I would go up to that hospital. Every day. Once they released me, I would go back and forth to that hospital every day and hold my child and feed her. And then one day they told me that she would be coming home soon. And that she was out of the water. You know, out of the water. They felt like she was going to make it. And so when they told me that, the next day, I wasn't there. I was somewhere using. And so when they got back in touch with me, which was a couple of days later, I went and picked my daughter up. You know, and I need to let you know that my daughter is a grown woman now. You know, living in New York. And I remember, you know, after she was born, I just continued to use, y'all. You know, using was a way of life. I lived to use and used to live. It was really just that simple for me. You know, but what happened was eventually I came out of that shelter, got an apartment, went in the apartment, and I could see God working the whole time. You know, I didn't see it then, in hindsight. And the bottom line was, he put me in an apartment building where the rental office was next to the mailbox. And the people knew I got a first of the month check. And the rental office was always open on the first of the month. So they saw me get that check out of the mailbox. So I ain't had no excuse. You know, I ain't had no excuse. You know, I told you I'm always concerned with how people see me. You know, and so I would get that check, go across the street, cash it, get that little money order for the rent, and the rest was all mine. And I continued to live like that for a couple of more years. And then what happened was one day I was in my apartment. Wasn't no electricity. I had sold all the furniture that Catholic Charities gave me. You know, I had one blue blouse hanging in the closet with a diamond little pin on it, and I was trying to sell that. I had sold hangers. I'm a good seller. I can sell. You know what I'm saying? That's why I don't go in that business. I can sell, you know. I used to take my hangers and color code them together and take them outside and sell them for $1.50. You know, I took utensils out of the drawer and I sold them. I'm trying to tell you what I would do to get high. I had no cut cards. And when I sold everything, I started selling me. And I continued to sell me for a long time. Until one night, I remember I had my son's coat on, that he had when he was 12. And I was walking down the street, and God picked me up. And when I took my coat off, he said, "That's okay." And I said, "What, baby?" And that's how I live. But what happened was one night I was in my apartment. There was no electricity. I had a cord running out in the hallway. You know, there was a couple of people in there getting high, and I was laying on the floor. My arm was swollen. You know, I had an infection from where I had hit a miss. And I was just laying there. And I remember I had an out-of-body experience. I could see myself floating over top of me, looking down and trying to figure out, how did I get here? And I remember, you know, getting up and going and asking them to leave. I ain't want to get high. Asking them to leave. And I said a prayer, and the prayer was, God, help me. And I always pray to God. You need to know that. You know, I would pray to him when I get locked up. You know, ask him to help me out of this situation. I would pray to him, you know, to get out of trouble. You know, and I would always make these promises. I promise I won't do it no more. If you just help me this time. You know, and I could never keep my end of the bargain. Never keep my end of the bargain. But that night, it was just a simple prayer. It was, God, help me, please. And the next morning, because see, by then, I didn't have my kids with me. My mother had took my kids. She had took my daughter. You know what I'm saying? And she said, I don't want to have nothing to do with you. And I was in that apartment alone. And I need to let you know that I'm the type of addict to use my kids as a means to manipulate people out of money. And so the next morning, a knock came on the door because I didn't have my kids and it was my mother. I hadn't seen my mother in months. And I remember opening up the door and just crying and saying, Mama, please help me. You know, and she took me to the hospital because I needed to go. And they gave me medicine. And eventually, about a couple of weeks later, I ended up back down on 14th Street. And I continued to do that. And then one day I woke up, and I was at my mom's house. It was around Mother's Day. I had this dress that I had tried all night long to sell, and I couldn't sell it. And so I said, this will fit my mother. And I took it up there for Mother's Day, trying to manipulate my way back in the house, and she took the dress and tossed it to the side and let me in. And I stayed there 3 days, and what happened was I didn't get high, and I remember waking up one morning, and I woke up to a feeling that I knew so well I wanted to use. But for the first time in all my active using, I didn't want to go. I was tired. And I remember flopping down on my mother's sofa and just shaking my head, saying, I don't want to do this. But I knew I was going. I knew I was going to go. And it was at that moment that God planted a thought. And the thought that he planted on my mind was to call at Washington Hospital Center. And I got up off the sofa and went in the room, picked the phone up, dialed up the hospital center. They told me they had a bed and I could come in there that day. And I hung the phone up, and I looked at my mother, and I said, I'm going in detox. And my mother looked at me, and she said, well, I don't have no money. And I said, that's all right. I'm still going. You know? And when she saw me outside trying to thumb a ride, she called me back. My clothes was dirty. They was in a little Safeway bag. You know, she called me back in and had my son go buy me a couple of packs of cigarettes, give me some quarters to wash my clothes, and she dropped me off at Washington Hospital Center. And that's where my journey began of recovery. Now, I need to let you know that when I went in that hospital, I went in there with the same self-centered fear. When I become fearful, I become angry, almost a rage. You know, when I'm afraid that you're going to leave me, when I'm afraid that you're going to hurt me, when I'm afraid that things are not going to go my way, I react angrily. And it was in that hospital that after being in detox that they gave me a prescription. And the prescription was to go to meetings, get a sponsor, pray, try to help somebody, you know what I'm saying, with no string attached, and stay away from slippery people, places, and things. That was the prescription. And when I came out of that hospital, I followed that prescription. I went to meetings. I got a sponsor. I started to pray. And I tried to help somebody, but they told me, don't forget about the dummy. And did I know who the dummy was? That the dummy was me. And I continued to follow that prescription, and as a direct result, my life got better. because I was no longer doing the things that I used to do. Now I'm in recovery. I'm trying to work the steps to the best of my ability. You know, I'm going to step meetings, you know, and I get in a relationship. Now I'm in this relationship, and I ain't want to be there. Let's talk about that. I'm in a relationship with an individual that I liked, but I didn't like him enough to have that kind of relationship with him. But he said things. He said things like, "Oh, you're so beautiful. I'll give you the world." He said things that made me feel good about who I was. You know, and I stayed in that relationship. And see, and one thing I've learned is that I stayed in that relationship 7 years. And I didn't want to be there. And one thing I've learned is that to thy own self be true. Because how you feel on the inside, it's going to come out. It's going to come out. And what I did was I did that person an injustice. Because I stayed with him and I didn't want to be there. And it always came out. It came out in the side of being on the edge of the bed. Not, "Don't touch me." You know, treating him like he's some type of disease. You know, I need to talk about that. I need to talk about how I used that individual. But I couldn't leave the relationship. I was miserable. I kept coming to meetings and sharing and talking, pulling people to the side and telling them about he did this, he did that. And the bottom line, it was me. And I couldn't see that, but I kept blaming him for what I was feeling because I was too afraid to leave. And I was too afraid to leave because I didn't want to be by myself. I thought that this was good as it was going to get. I thought it was as good as it was going to get, and I need to stay there. And then I need to let you know, while being in that relationship with an individual and doing something that y'all told me not to do, you said, "Protect yourself, Donna, when you get here. Protect yourself." I didn't protect myself, and that person infected me with HIV. So you know I'm going to stay. Because who else going to want me? I'm afraid that nobody else is going to want me. So I stayed. And I complained and I stayed. And I was angry all the time. And then I come out in public and y'all would say little things like, "Oh, y'all make such a cute little couple. Oh, I really like the way y'all look." And the bottom line is that I was miserable and so was he. Because I was making him miserable. But what I didn't do was, even though I was trying to work the steps to the best of my ability, in that third step, it talks about making the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. And even though I thought I had made a thorough choice to turn my will, what I came to find out is that I had not. What I had turned over to him was the drugs, but everything else I was in charge of. I was in charge of the finances, I was in charge of my love life, and I was in charge of my children. And as a direct result of that, I stayed in that relationship, I was miserable, and I had to file bankruptcy when I left. Because I'm medicating now, I'm shopping all the time. I'm getting credit cards, I got a stack full of credit cards. Because, you know, your credit get a little better when you get here. I got a stack full of, and I'm shopping. And I'm stealing. Not stealing in the stores, I'm stealing. Because I'm shopping, and I don't want nobody to know I'm shopping. So I'm stashing that stuff in the trunk of my car. And I'm sneaking out at 2 o'clock in the morning when everybody's asleep, grabbing bags and drinking it in the house. So as a direct result of that, what happened was, I'm shopping, and I'm constantly digging a hole, and I'm struggling, because I'm unhappy, because I'm fearful. And what I learned was that I hadn't made the decision to turn my will and my life over totally. And when I made that decision, once you make that decision, it requires some action. It really does. And I made the decision, and I had a conversation with him, and I told him he deserved to have somebody in his life that's going to love him the way he needs to be loved. But it wasn't me. And I started, and my sponsor at that time gave me a box. She said, start packing. And I started packing. She said, just pack a box. Walk out on faith. Packing that box was an act of faith, of showing faith in the God of my understanding that I had made the decision to turn my will and my life over to. And eventually I moved. I had enough courage. God gave me courage to leave that relationship. And I remember saying, God, I'm going to leave. And it doesn't matter who else leave me, just don't you leave me. As long as you're here, just don't you leave me. And even today, coming here, when I was asked to share, I became fearful because I care about what you think of me. I really do. You know, I want to be accepted. But it's not as paralyzing as it used to be. Because that same God that I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to and follow through with the rest of this program has granted me some courage. And when I'm fearful, I go to that God. And I pray. And that's what I had to do today. I had to pray before coming in here. And I had to ask God to remove me out the way because I'm filled with fear. And to show what he has done through me, his work that he has done through me. I have since been here, I have went back to school since being here. I will graduate on May the 20th with honors. I was fearful about that. I need to let you know I'm wearing these dark glasses because I'm going for surgery Monday morning on my eye. And that was a leap of faith. I remember coming in here and being diagnosed with uveitis and slowly losing my vision in my left eye. And then the uveitis, the medication, brought about secondary glaucoma, which brought about a lot of pain. And I'm blind in the left eye. I can't see, but I'm in pain every day. But vanity won't let me get rid of that eye. Won't let me get rid of that eye. Normal pressure in the eye is 15 miles was 55 to 60 on any given day in that eye. And then I had to go to that God that I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to and pray and ask for courage to have that eye removed out of my head. And they removed it. And I haven't had any pain since. But now I have to go back and have a revision of the implant that they put in my eye. Come on now. And it's all right. Yeah. It really is all right. Because my higher power has placed people in my life who care about me. And when I'm afraid and when I need strength, I can go to and get strength. And that includes every doctor that he has placed in my life. This program has allowed me, has helped me to establish healthy relationships with people. I have healthy relationships with each and every doctor that I have. When they screwed up the medical insurance and my insurance rate got to be so high, my doctors went to bat and got me a card with $6,000 on it to pay for my medication that they wanted me to pay $1,200 for a month for a 30-day supply. I'm talking about that higher power that's in my life that I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to. I'm talking about how he gives me courage to speak to you and speak to people about what's really going on with me, where I'm really at. And what areas I need help in. And he has not failed me yet. He has not failed me yet. Okay, he told me I had 5 minutes. My name is Donna, and I'm an addict, and I want to thank you for listening.